You're listening to Australia's fastest growing podcast network. This is the Lifestyle Pod Network. You're listening to The Dream Show with Jane Theresa Anderson.
Welcome to The Dream Show. I'm Jane Theresa Anderson, and this is episode 153. And my guest today is Tim. Now, as you know, and as I always have to say at the beginning of the show, I don't know what the guest is bringing to the show until we hit the record button. That's part of the experience of listening for you all, to get that excitement along with me. What dream is the guest bringing? How's it going to go? We've just finished recording. Here I am putting the beginning of the show on. Now, I did know one extra thing about Tim, though, as you'll hear. Tim wrote to me, emailed me, and said that she would love to be on the show, but she specifically wanted to ask about a dream alchemy practice that she'd been doing based on a dream. So as you'll hear, we talk about the dream, and we talk about the dream alchemy visualization that Tim had been doing and the reason that she was getting a bit stuck with it. So if you're unfamiliar about dream alchemy practices, don't worry. Shortly after Tim talks about her dream, I kind of stop everything and I talk to you, the listeners, about dream alchemy so that you're in the picture, so that you understand the rest of the conversation. Now, it's a fantastic recording, I think. And I do encourage you to stay in right to the very end. You know when people say, oh, don't leave the movie too early because after the credits have rolled, there's a fantastic bit where you see... You see the outtakes or something like that. This is a bit the same. It's a high energy recording throughout. It's full of lots of ahas and interesting insights. And just when you think it couldn't get any better, right at the end, right at the very end, there's a fantastic thing that happens. I'll give you a clue, just so you know when you get there. It's got something to do with cherries. So once you've heard the bit about cherries, I think you'll be in no doubt that, well, that was really good. So hang into the end because it's got lots in it. If you're been in this listening a long time and creating your own dream alchemy visualizations and doing them, there's a lot to learn from this about how to fine tune them as well. And if you've never even heard of this show before and you've never heard a dream analyzed by me before, you've never heard a guest talk about the dream before, that's all good too, because you're going to thoroughly enjoy this one. Just before we start, the website address is www.dream.net.au, and my blog at janetheresa.com, that's Teresa without an H, and my dream store at janetheresaanderson.com, or find me on Facebook. At all of those websites and blogs and resources, you'll find loads and loads of free stuff, lots of free articles. You can listen back to the last 152 episodes of The Dream Show on my blog at janetheresa.com, and you can also find out how to book consultations with me, buy my books, do all sorts of other stuff. But right now, you're here to hear Tim and me talk about her dream. So here you go. Welcome to The Dream Show, Tim.
Thanks, Jane Theresa. I'm glad to be here.
Have you had a good day so far?
Well, I kind of just woke up. It's 8:30 in the morning here. And I'm free today, so.
Oh, that's wonderful. So you can start off in a really interesting way and see how the day progresses. It's always good to talk about dreams when we've just woken up. Although I know, as everyone listening knows, I never know what dream the guest is going to present, but I do know that you emailed me and said, I'd love to be a guest on the show because I've had some interesting experiences and challenges with doing dream alchemy. So I know that as well as a dream, you really want to focus on the dream alchemy. So I'm really excited about this, and I have no idea what we're going to be talking about. So over to you.
Okay, maybe I'll start with the dream first.
Yes, that's good.
I was in my car. I was driving on a farmyard on the straight road, and behind me in the rearview mirror, I saw two of my friends, whom I don't know in real life, a man and a woman. And I was driving away from them. They were standing in front of a barn. And they, we together had been saving animals, a variety of animals. And one of the animals was a monkey with a long tail, long-tailed monkey. And I was driving away, and it kind of hurt to leave them. And they waved at me, and I don't know if I waved back, but they passed the farmhouse on my left hand, and the farmer and his wife were in the doorway, and they weren't very kind or friendly, kind of, I don't know, cold. And I waved at them, and I don't think they waved back. And I was, I remember thinking towards the animals, it's okay, they're going to take good care of you, and meaning my friends. I came to the mountain road, because I was in the French mountains, and I would take a left turn, and it was a bendy mountain road. And then this next thing I know, I'm in a parking lot of a hostel, a hotel, a restaurant kind of building. No, no, that's not true. I'm in it. I'm inside the building, and I am all of a sudden traveling with a group of women. And since we're in France, I want to. We want to ask directions. And actually, at that point, I don't know where we're going, but somehow I do, because together with another woman, we go to a girl that works there to ask for directions. And she's this other woman is on my left side. She's blonde, a bit smaller than I am. And because, well, my French is really poor, but I know everybody else's is even worse. So I just kind of assume they will let me do the talking. And I have this prefab sentence in my head of main act just to blur it out. And all of a sudden, this woman on my left side just starts talking really, I don't know, just word for word, searching. It's really hard on her. And I just crash right through her with my prefab sentence. And the girl apparently doesn't know, so she tells us to go to this waiter. And we go to this waiter, and still she, this woman who's with me, is on my left side. And this waiter is mixing two fluids to get the perfect cola. You know, I don't know why he mixes those two. But
the perfect cola, you said, yeah.
Yes. And we wait patiently for him to, because he's really concentrated and we don't want to disturb him. And this woman on my left side, three times she disturbs him, she ruins the drink. And he's not, it doesn't take him out of his concentration, it just starts over again and we have to wait more longer. But I'm kind of embarrassed because she does that. And the fourth time even, she sneezes into it. And I'm like, oh, what are you doing? And she sneezes a second time and she turns to her left. And I'm like, couldn't you have done it the first time? I'm really angry with her now. And then I'm in the parking lot and there are no cars. And it's apparently it's evening. It doesn't seem like evening. There are clouds overhead, but kind of dark clouds, not too dark. And one of the women I'm with is behind me and she's a bit older than I am. And she kind of says with concern in her voice, I don't think we can make it tonight because apparently we're going to a waterfall. But it's really close by, I think 200, maybe 300 meters from what I would guess. And my eagerness to get to the waterfall is so huge, I can't even describe. And having to spend the night there and wait even longer is unbearable. And then it stops. That was a dream. And my dream alchemy practice was I'm in the parking lot and I let it rain. According to my methods.
That's good.
It's always very cold. And I can make it stop pretty easily and pretty fast. And then I have these beautiful flowers in every color you can imagine. And then I hear a horse behind me. It's a little snort of a horse. And I turn around and it's a beautiful horse. It's a chestnut. In Dutch, we call it a fox. And it's really eager to get to the waterfall, apparently, also, because it wants me to get on and we drive off and we get to the waterfall and it's really great and I go into the water. But one day, and I think last night I realized it was probably because I, or maybe not because, but after I decided to sell the horse, because it would make things easier, maybe that's when it changed. I'm not sure, but last night I thought, hey, maybe that's why it happened.
When you decided to sell the horse?
Saddle, no saddle.
Oh, saddle, sorry, yeah.
Make
saddle
it easier.
Yeah.
So bridle and saddle, and I rode it. And I think it was after that, that one day I didn't hear a horse, I heard a donkey behind me. So I turned around and it was a donkey and I was like, what am I going to do with this? I tried one time to ride it to the waterfall, but it was no fun at all. So I kind of let that go. And then I didn't do it for a couple of days. And then the donkey was still there, and I tried really, really hard to at least get a horse beside it. And that worked, but it was never the same horse. It was just a kind of a dutiful, all right, if I have to, horse.
Yeah, dutiful.
Yeah. But later, can I say one more thing?
Yes, yeah.
Because I tried to do it 20 to 30 times a day, and I couldn't make it because it was so long. And in the end, I think it was day before yesterday, I thought maybe I should start a dream alchemy already riding the horse.
Mm.
And somehow I can, if I try, I can get a bit of the eagerness of the horse back, but it's never chestnut again. It's always dark, got it.
Right, okay. How many days had you been doing the dream alchemy before it started to change, before the horse started changing to the donkey?
I think roughly 2 weeks.
2 weeks, which is quite a good time. And during that time, so after 2 weeks you added the saddle and the bridle?
If I remember correctly, I think I did that.
Okay, I'm just going to pause there and come back to there. I just want to catch up for anybody listening that isn't maybe this is the first time they're listening and they don't quite understand what we're talking about, dream alchemy. So just hold it there, Tim, and I'll just do a very quick summary there for everybody else. If you haven't listened to the Dream Show before, or if you haven't worked with me before, I do a two-stage process. So there's number one, you look at the dream and you understand, you interpret the dream in order to be able to understand your mindset, to be able to understand yourself more deeply. And usually with the dream, we find something about our mindset that is limiting our life in some way. So we might look at a dream and decide, there's an unconscious belief I've got that is actually stopping me from responding in a more positive way in my life. This explains why I'm left waiting, not getting to where I want to be. So step one is insight that you gain from interpreting the dream. And then step two, what I do is this process called dream alchemy. So dream alchemy, as listeners, you might have gathered from listening to Tim there, dream alchemy can take, and usually takes the form of a visualization, though it can take other forms as well. But let's stick with the visualization. And what you do with this visualization is that you take some symbols from the dream, and you, while you're awake, you visualize those symbols in a changed way. So the simplest way to give an example of that is if you take a really simple dream, like you're on the beach and you're having a lovely time and everything's happy and wonderful, and suddenly you see this enormous tsunami coming towards you and you start to panic and you start to run. Your visualizer, you might look at that dream and think, oh yeah, I can relate to that dream. That's just what happens in my life. I just when I'm really feeling happy and relaxed, all of a sudden I feel overwhelmed by some kind of emotional situation that I just can't really handle. You know, it's so frustrating. Every time things just seem to be going right, this big thing comes up and it's so difficult and I panic. And so you recognize that dream, and then a dream alchemy visualization you might do there is to say, okay, while you're awake, close your eyes and imagine yourself back in the dream, and here you are on this beautiful beach having this beautiful, lovely, sunny day, and you turn around and it looks like there's a tsunami there, but as you turn and you face it and you watch it, this huge wave just starts to gradually go down and down and down and down until it's just a beautiful little playful ripple onto the sand. In fact, it looks so wonderful and happy and rippling that you actually take your shoes off and go and stand in it, and it just feels so good. So what you're doing is changing the dream for a better outcome. And what you're really doing is talking with your unconscious mind using its own symbols. So in this simple example, the tsunami dream, you might have had a dream where the tsunami represents all the emotions that just keep overwhelming you every time you think that things are going just fine. There's this tsunami of emotions that you just can't cope with that suddenly come out of nowhere, and your unconscious mind has pictured those as an overwhelming overbearing wave. So what you do in the dream alchemy is change that horrible symbol into something really, you turn and face it and you change it into something really quite beautiful that you can face and you can get in and you can cope with, and more than coping with it, you can enjoy by paddling in the water. And what this idea of taking a visualization or a dream alchemy practice does is that it changes your unconscious mind. So in this example of the tsunami, the person who, when everything is going fine, expects something huge to come up, you know, mere expectation often means that something big will come up. By talking to your unconscious mind and changing that symbol of big and overwhelming to something that you can, in fact, turn and face and cope with and deal with and actually quite enjoy, means that in waking, it changes your unconscious mind to believe that just when things are going really well, you know, maybe that can continue. Maybe if something comes up, you can turn around and simply by facing it, by engaging with it, by expecting a good and positive outcome, by getting into it and getting involved in it, you'll get a good result. So that's how the dream alchemy process works. And I'm just about to come back to you, Tim, but listeners, you can see from Tim's dream there that she's picked one point in the dream, which is the everybody feeling stuck, everybody waiting, the extreme disappointment that she's got about, you know, unbearable feeling, as she said, about, I just wanted to get to that waterfall and we're stuck here and it's just unbearable and we're waiting and it's just not going to happen. And she has changed that in her visualization into, yes, it's not a dry waiting place with grey clouds. The clouds of rain, there is moisture, there are flowers growing. This is not a waiting place. This is a blossoming and blooming place. And not only that, but I can get on this beautiful horse and I can be at the waterfall tonight and I can thoroughly enjoy that. So that's where Tim's coming from with her dream alchemy practice. And her question is, why did the horse become a donkey after a while? And I do have to say, sorry, Tim, just before coming back to you again, for our listeners who are unfamiliar with this process, we advocate doing the visualization 20 to 30 times a day for a couple of weeks. Yes, it does seem a lot. I do suggest trying to keep the visualization down to 1 or 2 minutes. And I noticed, Tim, you said yours was quite long. And after you have done it a few times, often it becomes quite quick and simple to do. So that's kind of the background. So thank you for waiting patiently yet again, Tim. Tell me, has waiting been the story of your life?
Well, I could relate it to one aspect, and that's my creativity. Mm-hmm. I'm an artist. I write and I paint and I illustrate. And I have a few blocks. One is nothing's ever good enough. So I start the same thing over and over again till I'm sick of it, and I just toss it aside.
Yeah.
And the second thing is, doesn't come to mind right now, I'm sorry.
It's all right, it'll come. I asked you about the waiting. Does that help too?
Yeah, it's like I'm waiting for myself to finally get results, get to finish the book and to finish the painting and that.
Okay, yeah, that's really lovely. So when did you actually have this dream?
The 7th of May this year.
The 7th of May. So the dream will normally reflect the 1 or 2 days before. So you were able specifically to look at that dream and say on the 5th and 6th of May, or the 6th and 7th of May, you particularly felt those feelings quite strongly about being the perfectionist and when am I ever going to get this finished?
I must have, and I keep a diary so I can look it up, but it doesn't necessarily come to mind right now.
That's okay. It's really just a hint for listeners to always relate the dream to the day or two before, I guess, in many ways. So I can see where you're coming from. Just before we get to your specific questions about the dream alchemy, and I love your dream alchemy, it's a really, really good one. There's a lot of animals in your dream. How did you approach thinking about the animals in your dream when you were interpreting your dream?
Well, the only animal I could really see was the monkey. Mm. I tried to get three personality thingies.
Words to describe the monkey. Yeah.
Yes. That's 30 words. And actually, I'm not sure if I don't think I looked at the animals. Mm. I tried to figure out the farmer and his wife, because they were so cold.
Yes.
Interested. And I didn't consider my friends because they were just, well, maybe I did a little because they were just, you know, they were really warm-hearted and kind, and they cared a lot. Mm,
yeah. So in a sense, right at the beginning of the dream, you had kind of, you noticed two opposite things. You noticed there were the friends that were really warm-hearted and caring. And at mm-hmm. that part of the dream, you also noticed the farmer and his wife who were particularly cold. You got cold on the one hand and warm and caring on the other, a set of opposites.
Yes.
Yeah. And did you have any feeling in the dream as to why? I mean, you know, you were interested in saving the animals, but as to why you yourself were moving on?
I have no idea. It was just time to go, and I'm not sure if I would never come back. But mm-hmm. at that particular time, I just felt heartbreaking to leave.
Well, that's quite
right. It's accepted by all of us.
Yeah, and that sounds quite good, because I like the way that you said that it was time to go. And I'm thinking about, you know, you saying sometimes as an artist illustrator, you overwork, which I'm sure a lot of artists will relate to. You overwork because it's not time to go yet. Oh no, it's not. I'm not letting these go yet. Oh no, I've got to save. I've got to, in a sense, like saving the animals. I've got to save this work and really get it ready before I let it go. So I actually really love the confidence with which you said that there, Tim. Like, yeah, it was time to go. Like, I might be coming back, but it was time to go. So there's a sense of moving on at the start of the dream. In contrast, in a way, towards the end of the dream, where it just got more and more waiting and more bogging down until actually at the end was stopped and you weren't going to get to the waterfall. So again, that set of opposites, like it starts off well, yay, time to go, feeling good.
And yeah, I felt sad.
You felt sad, yeah. So although you felt sad at that's right, sorry, you did. You said you felt hurt at leaving them behind.
Yeah.
And you tried to tell them that they're going to be okay because your friends are going to look after them.
Yes, I was reassured that things would be okay. I could leave it behind because it would be taken care of.
Because it would be taken care
that's
of.
How,
yeah.
That's how I felt.
Is there a sense with your work that, you know, as an illustrator, when you've finished the work and you hand it on to the next person, I mean, do you see the process all the way through to publishing or whatever, or is there a sense that you hand it to someone to take care of?
Well, I have sold pieces, paintings in this case, and it's always like, oh, I'm selling my babies.
And feeling hurt about it?
Yeah, in a sense, I guess, yeah. Mm. A little.
Mm.
But it's all right because it's in my head and I have photos and everything. So it's not like a complete departure and I'll never see it again or anything.
Mm.
Still there somewhere.
Does any of your artwork have any animal basis?
Yeah, all of them.
Okay.
But no monkeys.
But no monkeys. Why no monkeys?
I'm not really fond of monkeys. Not particularly.
Mm.
I have one, actually.
You
on a, on a birth card for a baby with a bunch of other animals. It was a zebra and an ostrich and a monkey. And the monkey actually hands a flower to the baby.
Oh.
While sitting on the head of the zebra.
So that monkey was playful and giving and warm.
Yeah.
Even though you're not fond of monkeys, you brought a monkey in for that one.
Yeah, but it's the same kind of a monkey even.
A long-tailed.
Yeah.
So how long ago did you do that one, the monkey illustration, the birth card?
I think it was 2008 or 9.
2008 or 9, so that's quite a while away now. Hmm. And are you still selling that one?
No, they're all, for babies, they're all individuals, because it's a card you buy as a new parent
mm-hmm.
To send to announce you had a baby.
Oh, right. I get it. That's lovely. So just because we've got the monkey there as quite an early symbol in your dream, You know, and at the beginning of the dream, we've got that feeling there, which you've sort of related to on the art level. Now, that we can look at a dream and relate at so many levels. We can relate at the physical level, the emotional level, the spiritual level, because our lives tend to be like that. Whatever's happening for us is reflected at the different levels in our lives. But we're talking about art and your feelings and your emotional connection with art. And we're just going to come into the dream on that level at the moment, because that's the level you've introduced it. And I think it's going to be a very powerful one for you. And right, you know, so we've got this beginning of the dream, which is, it's time to go. I'm not quite celebrating, but I know that I have to move on, as in I want to make progress. But oh, it hurts to leave my work behind. You know, I've tried so hard to save my drawings, not to really want to perhaps pass them on to other people. But I do realize that in order to have a flow of work coming in, I've got to allow my work to flow out. There's that sort of almost sense at the beginning of the dream. But the monkey comes in early, and you're leaving the monkey behind. So one of the symbols that we've managed to come up with the monkey, apart from you not being fond of them, is that it may be related to that birth card that you did in maybe 2008, 2009. So it's a big stretch for your mind at the moment, Tim, but was that a significant time for you, around about the time when you did the monkey birth card?
I was surprised to get the commission. Ah. I always am, because I kind of, I don't know, get a commission. Well, I haven't had one for years now. Mm. And actually with this one, was a colleague who asked me, and I made a sketch, and he and his wife really loved it. And I was like, oh, but it's going to be better than this. Don't worry. And he was like, no, it's fine.
I can make it and better.
It's never good enough. It's awful. Ugh.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's part of being an artist. But we are here to overcome this. So would you say, looking back, that was probably either one of your biggest commissions, or the first commission that really got you stumbling about, oh, it's not good enough to let go of yet?
The sense of it's not good enough I always experienced, but I think actually this was my last commission.
All right. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So, and you did actually let go of it in the end, and they were very happy with it, I imagine.
They were happy, and I was still like, it could be better.
Yeah. Okay. So, right at the beginning of the dream, we've got this feeling that although it reflected the last couple of days back in May for you, so this issue may have come up back in May when you look back at your journal about either, what do I do to get a commission as good as that? Or why aren't I getting the really great commissions that I want? Or why am I becoming increasingly a perfectionist and wanting to rework my art till it's really perfect? You know, one of those issues might have come up just preceding the dream, because it's almost like the dream has come back, or you might actually have made a firm conscious intention, right, enough of this, girl. I'm going to be moving on now. because the whole beginning of the dream has this feeling of, okay, as we say, you know, I've done my best. I've saved my work to the best form that I can. It hurts me to let them go, or to do a commission and let the work go. But I do recognize that I need to start to make some progress. And this is bringing up in the dream that through the symbol of the monkey, the last time that you had not only your last commission, Tim, but it was a really good commission and a really big one as well. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, oh, how am I going to get back there again? And you know, leaving, really prepared to leave that behind. And then we've got that issue of the warm, hearty people you're going with, who are basically the part of yourself maybe that is loving towards yourself and is warm and is going to always be kind to you as an artist and really nurture your artistic skills and bring out the animals in your illustrations. And maybe, just maybe, the cold couple standing to your left may be the part of yourself that is more reserved about your work, more critical, which you could relate to as being cold. I mean, you're obviously coming across as a very warm and lovely person, but within ourselves, we can be very cold towards ourselves, very stern, you know, that's not good enough.
Yeah, it's just kind of disapproving somehow. And what's funny is, I don't know if it means anything, but everyone who ticked me off or I couldn't get along with was on my left side, and I'm left-handed.
Ah, I was going to ask you what this was. Yeah. Okay, just an aside, because some curious people are going to be going, ah, if you're left-handed, does that mean the right brain and the left brain functions are reversed? It's different in different people. Sometimes if you're left-handed, the right brain, which we would normally say is your creative self, is in fact in the left and vice versa. And sometimes you're left-handed and it's the same way round as it is for right-handed people. So we don't know which way you are. But I think because we're talking about your art, your left hand is your vehicle for your... You actually hands-on use your hands for your illustrations, do you?
Mm-hmm, yes.
Yeah, not a keyboard. Okay, so there's a sense that if there's any part of your body that you could remonstrate with and be critical with, it's that left hand. So the left-hand side, and particularly because throughout the dream, maybe it's the way that I took the notes, but I've written left-hand side quite a few times rather than on the left. So left hand as in using your hand. So yes, there could be a coldness in your left hand that maybe holds back. Well, it does hold back, doesn't it? This drawing is not ready to go yet. This illustration, sorry, it's not ready to go yet. We need to hold back. Let's just be a bit reserved here. But at that point in the dream, you persist, which is good. You really do want to make this commission, and you go to the French mountains. So what do the French mountains represent to you, do you think, or do you feel?
When I was a child, we had holidays in the French mountains, and it was always great. And actually, there was a river and a waterfall,
mm-hmm.
and I loved it. It was carefree and, you know, joyful.
Okay.
Always summer.
Of course. So carefree and joyful. And when was the last time you went back there?
1986.
Oh, a long time. Okay. Yes. So carefree and joyful. And were you a practicing artist then?
Yeah, I drew birds, yeah. Actually, 1986, yeah, I started drawing comic style.
Mm. Yeah. Comic style, like a monkey. Mm. So last time you were in, let me just get this right, last time you were in the French mountains in 1986, you changed your style of illustration, is that what you're saying, to comic?
Yes.
Okay. And
I used to always draw horses
before that.
Yeah, I was a horse girl.
And when you started the comic style, did you then let go of the horses?
No, not really. Actually, I did a whole comic strips on a horse.
Oh, good.
Called Strawberry. Oh.
Okay, that's lovely. We'll come back to that. So when you were last in the French mountains in 1986, which you find a very carefree place to be, you developed or began a whole new style of illustration, which was comic style, which you are still involved in to an extent now.
Yes.
Yes.
My paintings are fairly comic style. Yeah.
Okay. So the French mountains, in a sense, may represent a whole new beginning, a turn in style, the beginning of the whole business, illustrative business, which is Tim now.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so it's quite good that although you're moving on in the dream, it's a sense of I'm moving on. Let's get back to where I felt carefree and where I really felt that cartooning was a good idea, where maybe, just maybe, I'm asking you this question, Tim, where maybe I wasn't so perfectionist. Maybe it was like, oh, look at this, I could do comic style, isn't this great?
Yeah, I think maybe I was always, I want to work fast, so I get bored easily. I want to just make a drawing and be done with it. And I think maybe it's because of that that I don't trust myself.
Mm. I did it too quick, it can't be good.
I don't know. Well, so that... I used to draw a bird and be done, you know? It'd be easy back then.
So you're saying several things there. On the one hand, I'm thinking, well, there's all this waiting in the dream. Like it can't be good enough to be that quick. I've got to hold back. I've got to wait. And like you, I can't remember what the second thing was I was going to say. I think it was actually the same, but in a different frame. So there's a sense that when you first, in 1986, when you first came out with the comic style, you were very happy with it. And as time has gone by, you've increasingly thought, oh, look, obviously I can't be that good. I can't charge that much for it if I did it that quickly. I can't charge for my pure and wonderful and absolutely brilliant talent. I've actually got to have spent time and hours on this. I should do this better. That's the kind of thinking that's been through it.
Yeah, and also a thing I notice is that I compare my work to other artists' work, and I always feel like I should be like other people just to be, I don't know, it's an insecurity. I just don't, I should let it all go and just do, but...
Oh, yeah. Isn't it lovely how we consciously know what we have to do, but the unconscious is going, no, 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 you can't do that. Be unique as an artist. No, 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 you have to be the same as every other artist and compete. Oh. No, it's lovely. So we definitely know that we're dealing with something unconscious, like consciously you're there. And of course, as an artist, you know, I would imagine your ultimate task really is to be different.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Yes.
Why don't I just be different?
Because you don't believe that, as you've said to us, there's a belief, conscious or driven more unconsciously, that that I'm too quick. It can't be that good because I've been too quick.
Yeah, maybe I just don't feel it's okay to stand out. I don't know.
Mm.
I'm not sure if the quickness actually is the thing. It's one thing. I don't know if it's everything that holds me back and makes me insecure.
So we've got taking your cue there of insecurity and maybe not wanting to stand out. I'm having a look in the rest of the dream to see where that comes up. And I love the fact that you had your perfect your French sent your prefab French sentence ready to go.
Can I say one thing?
Yes,
because I remember asking the girl. I threw this sentence at her, and I thought to myself at the same time, I hope she doesn't think my French is good and is going to reply at the same speed, because I won't make anything of it. And this is something I could do in real life.
You can speak French well in real life.
No, not at all. But if I were to ask something, I would want to have the exact words ready.
All right, I understand, yeah. So again, it's part of that's part of the same artistic thing of wanting to have everything just right, because you
need to be perfect.
Yes, I was trying to find a nice way to say it, but I'm glad you said it there. That's really good. Although I think most people know when we open our mouths to speak a language, which is not our primary language, we're excused many things. So you've got that sense there already of not only of a concern in the dream there in speaking French about wanting to be perfect, but also we've got that slow fasting again, that, oh my God, she might speak very fast back to me and then I won't understand. So there's that sense of doing things fast and slow. But throughout the whole thing was that sense of people talking over people or making a noise over people. So what I'm thinking there is that it's that question that you said, maybe I don't want to stand out, you know, and we can stand out when we talk over people, or we can definitely not stand out when other people talk over us.
Yeah, and what's so strange is in the dream I didn't feel as rude as I actually was when I interrupted this girl next to me, but I had the same thing in another dream. Someone was speaking and I just crashed through.
Yeah, and you felt good about it in both dreams.
Yeah.
Uh-oh. It's good. You should speak out more often, stand up more often. So reviewing to where we're up to here, we've got the sense of I've got the intention. I do have to move things along. I really want to be able to move things along. It hurts to not let go of my work, but I'm going to do this. I'm going to move on. I really want to get back to the frame of mind I had in 1986 in the French mountains, when I felt more carefree, when I came up with a new cartoon style of illustration, which was very quick and very good, and before I got bogged down and thinking that's too quick and too good. So anyway, in the dream, you're going with this, and it's all good. And then, you know, the other thing about not wanting to stand out comes up, and what happens, but you do actually stand out. You start talking over everyone, and it's like, whoa, maybe to some extent this is what it takes. In order to let go and really move on, you've got to be able to allow yourself to talk out. We might amend the dream alchemy to bring this in. You've got to be able to talk out, even if in the dream it's talking over other people. Now, in the dream, everyone and everything is an aspect of yourself, so you're only talking over yourself. It's okay. We're just getting a more expressive part of Tim speaking out here. And it's interesting that we then encounter the waiter. Now, your given language, your birth language is Dutch, and you're in France and you're speaking to us in English, but you're talking about a waiter. And of course there's a word play there, and the waiter is somebody who waits. Does that still work in Dutch?
Well, I think in English about 60% of the time. So I can imagine my subconscious would play.
Okay, that's really great. That's lovely. So we then bring in this thing of, okay, there's another set of opposites. See, there's a lot of set of opposites in your dream. Okay, what about speeding through this then? What about crashing through? What about talking over everybody? So it's not just standing out and talking. It's also, as you used the word crash, crashing through, moving forward, getting some speed in this. But, oh dear, we're going to encounter the waiter.
Yeah, and what's really weird is I had no intentions of interrupting his work.
Mm.
And I was kind of respectful. He was so concentrated and he seemed really kind and pleasant. He was focused. And every time my co-traveler would interrupt him, it kind of annoyed me.
Yeah.
Because I felt like, oh, what are you doing? I mean, he's perfectioning this cola and you're just ruining his work.
Yeah. All the time. Did you say he's perfectioning the cola? Is that what you just said? I'm glad you said it, not me. So can you see, he's trying to find, I hear what you say, he's trying to find the perfect mix between two fluids. So in this stage, like in a dream, finding a mix between two fluids, it's almost like trying to find a balance between perhaps two opposites. We're trying to blend something here and get a nice mix. But as you say, you're looking for a perfect mix. Cola, is that a drink you drink?
No, it's I've been thinking about it in order to get a dream alchemy practice. And cola to me, my dad has drunk cola for 30 years.
Mm.
And then all of a sudden stopped because it didn't appeal to him anymore. I drink it every now and then. Mm. It's not really like, well, it's nice, but it's not something I'd miss.
Yeah. Okay, it's nice, but it's not something I'd miss. So here is a part of yourself working really hard on trying to get the perfect cola, which is nice, but actually not something you'd miss. So I'm beginning to think now this is you really concentrating on doing an illustration and really trying to get the perfect balance in it, according to you, but going for perfection. And, you know, your bottom line about your artwork is it's nice. But on the other hand, it is something that you would miss because you don't want to let it go. So in a sense, it's that working on something and trying to get the balance right between making it beautiful and being prepared to let it go.
Mm. Well, the funny thing is, consciously, I don't need things to be perfect. It's just I let it go.
Letting it go. Mm. So what if you feel that consciously it's not about it being perfect, what do you feel is the difficulty in letting your work go?
I think criticism in the world.
Mm.
But I also criticize work of other people when there's a tiny thing that doesn't seem correct and it doesn't bother anyone. I see it and I'm like, oh, I would never allow my painting to go out like that. Which is really stupid. I mean, I know it's not constructive. It's not helping. And it's in paintings, it's even more about atmosphere and feel instead of being technically perfect. And I know it, but it's not enough.
I guess your criticism of others' paintings is helping you inform your art and your style. As you said, you know, there are styles of painting which don't actually need to be perfect. It's a different form of emotional expression. So it's interesting for you to allow those artists to let go of their work because they don't have to maybe be perfect in that way, but to inform your own work about the you know what you would and wouldn't let go in your own work. But we've really come up with criticism here, self-criticism. If you let go of work and someone criticizes it, how do you feel? Has it ever happened?
Well, the first thing that comes to mind is the opposite. Someone bought something of me, and I was like, oh, my God, do you think that's good? someone criticizing me. There are a few paintings of mine that I'm so proud of that the world could stumble over it, and I wouldn't care. Because I'd be like, I like it. It's only a few. If I'm comfortable with it, it's okay. But I think 2% makes me happy and 98% would have me second guessing. And if anyone would say, well, I don't like this or that aspect, I'd be like, yeah, okay, I can imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah, I probably feel the same.
So why do you feel that you have difficulty letting go then, if you're concerned about, you're not concerned about criticism?
Oh, that's only the 2%.
Yeah.
So it's 4 paintings or so. And those are just, they're, I don't know, a match or something. There's a click. And they're not perfect, I think, because of, well, I draw animals, like I said, and it's the way they are. They all have personalities. And the thing, the ones I can easily throw into the world are the ones that are like, oh, I'm cool.
The ones that show you to be cool.
Yeah.
And the ones, what would be, the other ones would show you not to be cool, but to be, what is it you're fearing that they show you to be?
I don't know, maybe shallow comes to mind.
Shallow, okay.
I don't know why.
Yeah.
Because they all have different, it's all about emotions. I have angry animals and happy animals and sad animals. But so it's hard to say because it's not one emotion, but I think in general, shallowness, I guess.
So, you know, often as you probably, I'm sure, know from listening to so many podcasts, as you've told me you have, that often water in our dreams can tend to represent our emotions. And you've got this feeling at the end with, you know, it's unbearable that I can't get to the waterfall. And you've just said, you know, fear of being seen as shallow, which we really mean is like shallow water, not deeply emotional. So, you know, you're putting a lot of heart and emotion and energy into your animals and your cartoons and your illustrations, not wanting to be perceived as being shallow. So there's that sense there of maybe not getting to the waterfall because you're not feeling that really, that you're really reaching that point of having the deeper emotional part of aspect of your work really showing in the world.
I don't know.
But we'll actually sort of rein that in. God.
Because I'm looking at pain that doesn't have that tug, so to speak, for me. And I don't relate to the animals. I mean, they're nice and they're cool, but they're not me.
You don't relate to the animals in your work.
They're not me.
They're not you. So why?
Yeah. So maybe indeed what you said. There's not enough heart, not enough emotion in it.
Yes. And that's, but you really want that because you want to get to the waterfall. I bet you're recognizing the kind of dryness, and you've got the dark clouds, which although you said they're not that dark, but you know that dark clouds can be an emotion as well. You know, the feeling dark or angry about it, and definitely huge emotion at the end, Tim. They're eager to get there, unbearable that I can't, you know. And then there's a lot in there, but I do want to move to the dream alchemy and change it and show you why it didn't quite work the first time after a while. But can you sense you've got that? In fact, yeah, my brain is working too fast here. I'm just going to slow it down because there's something I want to say. So the bottom line of the dream is that, as you have just realized yourself and had a lovely moment there, I want to put more of my heart and my emotions in my illustrations. It's been a long time since 1986. You've had a really good run of doing the type of animal cartoons you've been doing. You probably will continue to do those a lot more. But there's this feeling that I want to put more heart, more warmth into my, more emotion into my work. And then maybe I'll be ready to let it flow more into the world. And maybe this is something that you develop, that you are more comfortable about standing out and being different with.
Maybe, because if I may say, the ones I'm happy about, it's okay if they stand out. I don't mind if people would, you know, dislike them.
It's like great. I love it. So, you know, it just seems so simple, doesn't it? So just go out and do the ones you like, and then it's easy to let them go. And People are paying loads of money for them. You stand out as an individual artist. And when you're totally different, you get profiled in the media because you are so different. I mean, it's just win-win all the way down the track. So I'm glad you got the message. It's great. And so I love the fact that with your dream alchemy, you chose a horse, because for lots of other reasons, as you say, in the French mountains, you relate the French mountains to horses and being carefree as well. You did say that, didn't you?
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of taking you back to that carefree time. So you've brought the horse in as an animal that you do love.
Yeah, very much.
Right. So instead of, in this dream alchemy, instead of all these animals that you, in your art, that you don't actually really relate to, particularly the monkey, you have made a really brilliant choice about bringing in an animal that you do relate to, the horse, and that you actually have a good heart connection to as well, and also reminds you to carefree times as well. So it was a brilliant decision to bring in the horse. And as you can already see, it's in while you were doing the dream alchemy, it tended to change back to a donkey, because yes. I guess a donkey is, I know what people would think of a donkey. What do you feel about a donkey?
Well, this particular one did not want to go.
No, that's right.
So it was like I was saying duty to it, and it said, "I don't think so."
That's right. Okay, so what your dream alchemy did was that you picked a beautiful horse, which was your heart and your soul, and yes, and you did a beautiful alchemy. Yes, an end to these grey clouds, an end to this raining, and lack of rain, an end to this dry period of emotions, an end to the animals that I don't like working with, even though you didn't realise that's what you were doing in the alchemy. I'm going to bring in a lovely horse for myself, and in the visualisation, you get to the waterfall, and it's beautiful. Beautiful, and you've got blossoming, and it's a perfect alchemy. And then for some reason, you decided to put a bridle and saddle on the horse. Tell me why you ruined this beautiful, beautiful dream alchemy and put a bridle and saddle on a horse that represents beautiful, flowing passion. What made you decide to do that?
It was just laziness. I thought the riding would be easier. But in fact, it didn't make much difference anyway.
Mm.
Well, that saddle was fine.
So it did get you to the waterfall for a while, but you have a feeling that you said at the beginning of the recording, you have a feeling that that's why the horse changed into a donkey.
Well, yeah, last night it dawned upon me that probably, that's where I changed something.
Mm.
That's the only thing I changed.
Yeah. So, when I was laughing a couple of minutes back and I said my brain's running too fast because there's something I want to say, it's because I'd heard myself saying, we've got to rein this in now, which, of course, is the horse's reins, the pulling back, you know. So a part of myself, which is far wiser than me, was going, it's about holding back, reining back, you know, saddle, bridle, hold back. And once again, control, yeah, moving into waiting. And as you said, you know, it felt more dutiful, and you were going then into a dutiful, you know, come on, dutiful horse, you can do this, put the bridle, put the saddle, let's do this nicely now. And it turned into the donkey, and I'm not going to go anywhere. I'm going to go back into waiting and stopping until I'm good enough. You know, dutiful isn't enough, I've got to have my heart in this. Dutiful isn't enough, I've got to have my heart in this. So...
Yeah, it's now that I hear you talk, and I realize it's a conflict between dutifulness and just carefree happiness.
Yes, that's right. And you know, and you have already said, and you'll hear yourself when you listen back to the podcast, too. You know, you've already said that it's the carefree happiness through your art and through life in general. But I added that bit in. But through your art, that actually. Negates all these other things that have been holding you back. So, you know, there's no reason not to do it. So my feeling why the dream alchemy started to stop working was that you had the bridle, you had the bit of the holding back in there. And I also feel you might have began to overwork it. You might have started to bring... Did you start to bring more elements into the visualization the more you did it, in the same way that you maybe sometimes overwork your cartoons before you let them go?
No, I didn't add more elements than just the saddle, but I always thought it, I felt like it was too long because I couldn't do it more than about seven times a day.
Yeah, okay.
And it took me a while to get into the emotions, and I thought if I just see it and I don't feel it, it's not going to work anyway.
That's exactly right. You do have to feel it. So I think to just sort of deal with that bit first, to make it faster, I would probably maybe the first time do the full length one that you did, and then probably just bring it down to simply getting on the horse without the saddle, getting on the horse and knowing that, you know, noticing the flowers all around you as you gallop off, getting that feeling of your heart being really warm and beaming out love and carefreeness, and instantly arriving at the waterfall and continuing in the same joyful, warm, loving feeling. So, you know, but without the saddle and in proper connection with the horse, I would just bring it down to that. And the more you practice that just getting in touch with that emotion, the visualization can almost become shortened into close your eyes, begin with that feeling in the heart, begin with that feeling of carefree and flowing with beautiful, positive emotion. And as you're feeling this feeling, notice that, oh, that's interesting. I'm actually riding a horse. And that's interesting. I'm actually smelling the waterfall. And that's interesting. I'm actually seeing the flowers. But it's all underpinned by the heartbeat.
Wow.
Mm.
You can't see me. I'm grinning from ear to ear.
Oh, good.
No, because it's funny. The first horse, the chestnut, is exactly that feeling. It's so happy and joyful and it wants to go.
Mm.
And while you were talking, I got that feeling back.
Oh, that's great. So I think what happened, I mean, you've got that now and that's the one to go with. I think what happened is that you were doing the alchemy. From what you say, you're beginning to think, oh, maybe this is a bit long. Maybe I'm only doing 6 or 7 a day. It's also becoming a bit of a hard work, a bit of a labor. I've got to be a bit dutiful about this. And in a sense, the horse turned to the donkey. It became a dutiful thing rather than an easy flowing thing as well. And putting the saddle and on it late into the visualization was actually you starting to sort of weigh it all down a bit and bring it back in. So sometimes a dream alchemy, when you're doing it, does tend to morph on its own, but usually it morphs in a way which opens out and only extends the beautiful feeling, you know, the aim of the alchemy, that it simply becomes better, and that's okay too. Sometimes, you know, and it is a tricky business. Sometimes we might slightly get the misinterpret the dream or get one angle of it wrong and create a dream alchemy that doesn't really quite fit with the dream, and that's not what you did. You did a beautiful dream alchemy, but we might just do that moment. It doesn't quite fit with the dream, and then we may not quite sit comfortably with the dream alchemy visualization, and it may morph, and that may be a point for you then to go, okay, let's go back to square one, let's revisit the dream, let's see if my dream alchemy was a really good one, if I can make it better. That said, for some people listening out there, sometimes if you've got a dream alchemy to do and it really is a dream alchemy about totally changing something that is very long-term ingrained in you, in other words, you know you're going to make a change that is going to be for your better, but it's going to be so life-changing that part of you is going, oh, no, can I really do this? Then you may get bogged down in your dream alchemy. Then it may transform and do all sorts of things for you, but it may actually be the perfect dream alchemy, and you just need to really work with yourself to, you know, to get through it. So it is worth, it is a tricky subject, but you've picked a great one. You confused it by making it too long and by adding the saddle. And you've learned something by how the dream alchemy morphed. You've learned something about why it went back to the donkey. You've learned something from the dutiful. So it actually delivered a great gift to you, didn't it?
It did, yeah, absolutely.
Mm. So you've got... Yeah, go on.
Well, if I were to... I'm going to do this practice, obviously, for 2 or 3 weeks, but is there a way of knowing that you're kind of done? I mean, I like yes. doing it. But I mean, is there a way to
of course there is. Notice? Yeah. That said, I do have some clients who have been consulting for a very long time who occasionally say to me, you remember that dream alchemy we did back and it worked so well? I still really like that one. And sometimes sometimes you've got one and you just really enjoy it and do it. You know, sometimes people will translate one into art and put that picture on the wall and connect with it a lot. So there's nothing wrong in staying with one that you enjoy. But usually what will happen is 2 to 3 weeks is usually enough. 2 weeks is usually good. And then just twice a day, night and morning, until you feel that you can let it go, but it's okay to keep going. I am getting around to answering your specific question. And sometimes if you know what the issue is, and you do, and you encounter it, or you encounter the beginnings of it in waking life, you can actually summon up that dream alchemy then, just to kind of bring it home to work within you. But knowing when you don't need it anymore, if yours hadn't morphed and changed, I would have expected you to start noticing your art change, given what you said, to start noticing, well, not necessarily your art change, but to start noticing yourself questioning your art, to start noticing yourself thinking, maybe I want to do more free-flowing stuff, maybe I want to put my heart in my art. You know, some of the things that the Dream Alchemy was designed to create, you might suddenly start noticing yourself feeling more naturally without the negative projected outcomes, without thinking, oh, but what if people criticize me, or what if this, or what if that, so that you'd actually start to notice changes. Another thing would be if you notice what I would call positive synchronicities, you know, synchronicities happening that you go, whoa, I've just seen all those horses in that field and they all looked really carefree. Or, whoa, I've just won a trip to the French mountains, you know, and those kind of things. You go, okay, my alchemy is on the ball here, because I'm beginning to see signs of it, and they're positive signs in my waking life. But really what you're looking for, if you fully interpreted and understand the dream upon which your dream alchemy is based, you're basically looking to notice where you automatically, habitually, unconsciously begin to respond in different ways in accordance with what you've planned, and then you're ready to let go. So in a sense, it's funny that you know, even though I was helping you review your dream again there, you were very quickly going, yes, that's right, I need to put the more heart, yes, that's right, almost as if it wasn't like, yeah, maybe that's right. It was like, yeah, I'm already there. So it's possible that the Dream Alchemy has actually been warming you up and getting you ready for this all along anyway.
Yeah, well, it did go well, very well, for the first 2 weeks.
Mm.
But all of a sudden I realized the other block I have, and I think it's indeed what you said, referring to the same thing, the dutifulness. I can get really enthusiastic about so many things and I want to do them all. And then I go like, oh, I'll make a list and do this and then this and then this. And then I'm like, oh, no.
Yeah,
and I just
stop
you. Leave it all together. Don't do anything.
So that the sense of the dutifulness yeah, of doing the Dream Alchemy visualization could have fallen under that thing as well. But I guess also, you know, doing the Dream Alchemy in a sense did work for you, because it helped you to notice more about the dutifulness. You know, it brought up more stuff. So it can be a bit like that old tired metaphor of the onion skins again. You know, your Dream Alchemy removed some of the onion skins towards getting to the basic issue, and then we needed to go a bit deeper and a bit deeper and a bit deeper and really fine-tune that Dream Alchemy to get in there.
Mm. And is there a way for me to find out where it origins from, this dutifulness?
Yes, there is. We're going to have to start reining it in a bit, because Michael's just told me we've been recording for an hour, and it starts to get a bit difficult for people to download if it's more than an hour. But certainly, of course, yeah. I would probably have to work with you a bit longer for that, but the quickest way to do it is sometimes to say to yourself, when you're still talking about a dream, as we are, when you're talking about a dream, you've actually got a much easier access to your unconscious mind, because we're talking about the dream symbols, your unconscious is still going, I'm still in here, we're talking dreams, this is me, I'm listening. And so at such a time, you can just say to yourself very quickly, as I'm about to say to you, without even thinking about it at all, without using your brain at all, when's the earliest time in your life you can ever remember being called upon to be dutiful?
Okay.
When was that?
Oh. When was that? I'm not sure.
No, that's okay. I probably put the panics on you by saying that we had to rein in the recording for an hour. But have a little think about it. Usually, because we've brought it up today, it may start to feed into your dreams over the next couple of days, because it's now become something for your dreaming mind to process, and that may bring up some symbols that can help you with that. But also, just contemplate, you know, after we've finished the recording, when was the earliest time in my life that I was required to be dutiful and it and it had an emotional outcome either one way or the other, and that may then come back to helping you. Or what's the opposite to dutiful? What is the opposite to being dutiful? Being naughty, doing things your own way. So then reverse the question. When was the earliest time you ever remember in your life doing things your own way and getting told off about it? Not being dutiful. Naughty, well, Tim.
Actually, about dutifulness, I can't relate. I cannot relate to the naughty. I'm not naughty at all.
Not even when you were a little child.
Well, one thing comes to mind, and it's really weird. My parents were on the verge of a divorce, and apparently the three of them were together. So my mother, my father, and her new boyfriend.
Yeah.
And apparently I was about 2 years old. And this is a story my father told me. I was apparently throwing cherries at a white wall. And he told me not to, and my mother was laughing because she was in love and she didn't care about anything else. And he told me off, and I thought it was funny because my mother and her new boyfriend were laughing. And he actually disciplined me, and I was like, I don't know what I was like. I only know the story because of my dad, but the night before last night, I dreamt about cherries. So that's why this came back.
There you go. So long story short, and I have to have something to add to that before we say goodbye. It's even your dream alchemy was already working on it because your cherries have already come up in your dreams. See that? The shifts have already happened. It's brought up the thing already for you to consider. So we know the dream alchemy is working. So by asking when were you dutiful and you're not being able to respond to that by asking the opposite question, when were you not? So it's brought up this whole thing about being disciplined. So the answer is when you were two, that's when it started. So there are lots of techniques that you can do that you go back to basically revisit yourself when you were two and have a good laugh about it and say, look, it's okay. So Tim, it's okay to stand out. I bet throwing those cherries at the wall made beautiful red artistic patterns on a lovely white canvas. So I bet there was some kind of artistic expression going on there too. So we've got the whole thing there as well with being told off and disciplined over standing out and doing something beautiful, big wall art in a completely unique and fast way. Fast art, this bunch of cherries on the wall. Don't need to overwork this one. So there's a lot of stuff there. That's where it all started.
Okay.
We have to wind this up.
Yes.
Thank you so much for bringing a lovely dream and some fantastic dream alchemy questions. And I have a feeling that while your baseline art may continue to work very well for you for a very long time, that you're actually going to produce some wonderful, new, expressive, great, fantastic stuff in your art, which is going to sell really well, get great commissions, and you're going to be happy and carefree too, and that would be fantastic alchemy, wouldn't it?
Oh, that sounds great, yeah.
Thanks, Tim, for being on the show.
Yeah, thank you very much.
And there we go. It's a long show. It was a lot of fun. So I'm not going to say much more really now. The website address is dream.net.au, the blog at janeteresa.com, and the dream store at janeteresaanderson.com. Our next episode, episode 154, will be due out on the 25th of July 2014. But of course, you can listen back to all of these shows on my blog anytime in your life whatsoever. Well, at least now, and I'm sure for many years to come. We've been recording this for many years. So have a lovely month, enjoy your dreams, and I'll speak to you next time. I'm Jane Teresa Anderson.
The Dream Show is a production of Jane Teresa Anderson for the Lifestyle Pod Network. You can find more great podcasts like this one in the Lifestyle Pod Network section of iTunes.